fine, this done, wicked.
Leeds Student Radio.
Sound.
Students.
In Leeds.
Delivering over 100 hours of broadcasting made by 300 students every week.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
And
it's all about you.
You. Looking for a house next year?
Then come to Spencer Properties for a friendly, professional and stress-free service.
With a wide range of properties in Hyde Park, Headingley, Woodhouse, Burley and the city centre.
Platinum membership with Unipol.
We are the perfect way to find your first home.
And we've been voted the safest landlord by Leeds University Union.
Spencer Properties. Come find your new home.
Take a trip to Italy with La Bezzi Italian Restaurant.
You can bring your own alcohol and make use of our 10% student discount every Sunday to Thursday
on a wide range of top quality dishes straight from the heart of Italy.
Come visit us on Clarendon Road, just a stone's throw away from Leeds University.
La Bezzi, authentic Italian cuisine.
You look tired, mate. You could do with a flat white coffee.
Open from 8 a.m. with three guest blends. This ain't your normal cup of joe.
Come down to Brudenell Grove in Hyde Park and tuck into our range of food and drinks alongside free Wi-Fi.
We're open from morning to the late hours,
giving you plenty of time to kick back with your mates.
East Village, proud sponsors of the LSR Breakfast Show.
Leeds Student Radio brings you The Beat.
Every weekday at 6, we'll be giving you the latest on student news, views and lifestyle in your city.
Brought to you by Amber Cars, you'll be the first to know what's going on.
Call us on 01132 311 366 or download the app
for the quickest taxi service in Leeds.
The Beat is the only place to be.
Broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound
of students in Leeds. This is Leeds Student Radio.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles. Hello from the other side. I must have called. Talk about myself, I'm sorry. I hope that you will. Did you ever make it out of that town where nothing ever happened? It's no secret that the both of us are running out of time. So hello from to tell you I'm sorry.
I'm Jessie Ware and you're listening to Leeds Student Radio.
Hello, and this is Leeds Student Radio. You're listening to Political Animal, the show dedicated to debating political questions that matter to you. I am your presenter for today, Lance Casely-Hayford. Just as a one-off treat, I'm here because Isaac and Charlotte are not available today. But of course, as always, we have our fantastic panel. We have the amazing Yasmin DaCosta.
What's up?
We have the wonderfully voiced Jonathan Green.
Hello, my public.
We have the utterly jolly, Tamsin Scott.
I don't know what intro to say for me.
And we also will be having Jack Patrick on later, who will be talking about his hometown. But more on that later. October is Black History Month, and this, our show today is going to focus on Black History issues. Early on in the week, there was an event called Why Is My Curriculum White, which was set up by the union, set up by Melissa, who's the education officer with the union. And Yasmin, of course, will be talking about that event because she went along. But first, we have the news bulletins with Tamsin Scott.
A British man who was imprisoned for possessing alcohol in Saudi Arabia will be released within a week, Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond has said. Carl Andre, 74, was arrested by Saudi religious police after being found in possession of homemade wine. He has been in prison for more than a year, and there are fears during this time of flogging. Jeremy Corbyn has pressed David Cameron to guarantee nobody will be worse off as a result of cuts to tax credits. During Prime Minister's questions, the Labour leader told the PM he had lost the backing of Conservative supporters over the controversial reforms. Ministers are to set out new proposals following Monday's Laws defeat, with peers voting to delay the £4.4 billion cuts. Mr Cameron said that any savings not made from tax credits would have to come off budgets like the police and the NHS. A male pupil has died after a stabbing at an Aberdeen school. Police Scotland has said that another male had been detained after the emergency services were called to Colts Academy at about 1:30. Aberdeen City Council earlier said it was aware of what it described as a serious incident. A spokesman added, due to the nature of this incident, we will not be issuing further comment. More details have emerged about five Britons who died in a whale watching boat when a whale watching boat sank off the Canadian coast. Leviathan 2 sank near Tofino, British Columbia, on Sunday. A 27-year-old Australian man is missing. Investigators said earlier that most passengers were standing on the vessel's left side when a wave hit it from the right, affecting its stability. They said the vessel tilted and then capsized.
Thank you, Tamsin, for that news bulletin update. Right, so we're going to discuss some things that some political other stories that have happened today and through the week. First off, tax credits. There has been a lot of confusing stuff when it comes from Parliament, when it comes to Parliament on tax credits. It's been, I think, we've had Parliament vote on the government's stuff, and then the House of Lords had voted it down, I believe.
Yeah, they didn't outright reject the changes to tax credits, but they did say that it should be delayed until a full review can be done on the financial implications for people in Britain, and I think. The other condition, it should be delayed and there should be a view. I think those were the two conditions that were put in place by the House of Lords. So at the most, it looks like these changes, these cuts, aren't going to come in before Christmas at this rate.
I'm just wondering if anybody else has anything to sort of add to that. I think tax credits is something that will affect a lot of the tax credit changes is something that will affect a lot of working families and so on and so forth. I'm just wondering if
very controversial issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's something that obviously, like I said, Jeremy Corbyn has stood up against, and he's definitely trying to make David Cameron responsible for what he's trying to do, and I think he's bringing it a bit more into the public eye. But it just seems a bit of a weird one for the government to start off with, a bit of a weird very, like, in there, very straight ahead, cutting, you know, tax credits is conservative.
I guess. But I think the idea was that for the government to sort of be this, the tax credits isn't just one single thing. I think it was a whole sort of range of proposals / measures to sort of rein back spending and so on. I don't know, Jonathan, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, the idea was, or the idea we've been told, is that rather than tax credits, they'll say arise things like wages and reduce other taxes. Of course, there's an extent to which we can either believe that or the likelihood of that happening. But I'm not surprised, obviously, I'm not surprised that tax credits were much resistance to it, especially since many of the Conservative Party themselves rejected the extent to which they were reduced. Of course, many Liberal Democrat and Labour MPs and Lords are against it as a principle in full. But there was a lot of debate amongst the Conservative MPs as well, and Corbyn in last week's Premise of Questions actually quoted one of the Conservative MPs who were against it. And I'm very interested in how the House of Lords has played its part, because in the past, personally, I've been ideologically against the House of Lords being unelected.
And it was,
yes, but it was a surprise to me this time that for once, at least in my personal opinion, they did something which I would advise to. That at least there's a modicum of relief for those who would be affected. Of course, I'm not entirely hopeful for the future for that on topic, but at least for a while, we've got something, you know, a breath of relief.
We'll move on. The next small thing that we'll just keep it brief. Cameron in Iceland doing his EU stuff again. In particular, he's warning against Eurosceptics campaigning for the Norway model or Nordic model of remaining in the EU, which it isn't remaining in the EU, but it is, but it isn't. It's obviously the Nordic model, they are a part of so many different EU treaties but don't get a say. They pay exactly the same amount as the UK per head into the European Union pot, but don't, again, as I said, don't get a say in on how any of the treaties are formed, in how any of the laws are made. So I'm just wondering what people's thoughts on that are.
I'm so sick and tired of this, of this sort of just projecting other countries' models onto the UK, because quite frankly each country is unique. We all have different economies, different needs, different populations, so you can gain inspiration or gain ideas from other models that countries have, but to simply say that we can be just like Norway, you can never be just like another country. And so I hate it when they do that gross oversimplification of very complex issues, and this is a very complex issue, and dumbing down leaving the EU to simply a transfer of models from one to the other is ridiculous. It's not going to be exactly like Norway has a very specific relationship with the EU that would be difficult to replicate.
Yeah, I think really building on that, it seems that David Cameron is looking for, so he's, David Cameron has always been his idea that he wants to stay in the EU, but he wants certain changes, as it were. And he's been trying, which seems his very hardest, to gain some changes. And he seems to look at Norway, or the Nordic model, and The Guardian, I've been reading The Guardian article, it mentioned Switzerland, of course, which seems to be pulled out at all these debates, as a certain model in terms of it's a part of it slightly, but not in other respects. But, you know, you're quite right, is he can't transpose a direct model from one country to the other. There are, of course, different histories between the countries, different levels of the population, different mixes of the population, which are important. I mean, I can't profess to know too much about Norway, but I take pride in, say, Britain's multiculturalism, and it possibly may not be able to fit into the Norway model for such issues as that.
And I think as well that David Cameron is really undermining and underestimating the concerns that the EU has in terms of security and how it will be altered politically if the UK were to leave the EU completely. It just wouldn't look good on the world stage to have such a big country, one of the biggest countries in Europe, leave the EU. You know, there's just some countries that from the beginning, well, the UK was took quite a long time to get on board, embarrassingly, in my opinion. But there are some countries that are quite integral to the European project: Germany, France, Italy, the UK. And if one of those players leaves, you know, that has serious implications for NATO, for other treaties with other economic countries. I'm pretty sure that China, the US, Latin America, all the other major continents and powers do see Europe as obviously this big, you know, collective idea and collective community of countries, but they do assume that there are these major players, that there will be these five central players who will always be there, and then you're just telling them, well, actually the UK's not in it anymore, and they're just like, well what does that mean? It has much bigger ramifications. It's not just about economics and how much we pay in. There's much bigger ramifications.
Thank you, Jasmine. We're going to play a song.
Just before, I've got some quite sad news.
Okay.
Earlier I reported that there was a stabbing in Aberdeen. The boy has sadly died from this injury. The next of kin have been made aware, and that's just the update with the news.
All right, thank you very much for that, Tamsin. We're going to play a song. We're going to play Bring Me the Horizon, True Friends.
I wouldn't hold my breath if I was you, 'cause I forget, but I'll never forgive you. Don't you know? True friends stab you in the front. Things work out, such a bitter irony, like a kick right to the teeth.
was Bring Me the Horizon, True Friends. Now, there was an event earlier in the union, as I mentioned earlier, called Why Is My Curriculum White? And it was all for Black History Month. There have been a lot of events, actually, but this is the one we're going to focus on. And, I think I'll play a little bit of the what people thought of the event. Then we'll go into Yasmin's report on it. Then we'll have a debate on the issue. But have a listen to this.
General thoughts, feelings and comments on the talk this evening?
I thought it was really good, actually. I thought it was really broad, but I think we need to expand our thoughts into the community. And the people, like, when I was at school, all we learned about was Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. And I think it needs to be more broader. There's a lot more black people who have done more for our history, who have done more. Like, we were kings and queens before the slave trade, when really they tried to make it seem like our history started with the slave trade, when really didn't. Like, there's so much more. Like, how are we meant to inspire our youth, our people, our children, when all we ever hear about is them stopping the slave trade? So the only way they're trying to say is the only way we can succeed is by protesting, when really we can just succeed by being ourselves and showing what we can, what we are really about as a culture, as a people.
So what are your thoughts on the talk and why did you come?
Basically, I've just started doing sociology, a module on sociology, and I was quite surprised by the representation, you know, or the lack of representation of black ethnic minorities within the accredited reading list, basically, and also female representatives as well. So yeah, I thought I'd come and find out more.
So just want to get your general thoughts, feelings, views on what you just heard, and how was it for you?
I think it's a really important campaign. I think kind of really broadening out the curriculum actually helps everybody. Like, we need more focus. I do politics, and so much of our, like, Melissa helped things out a lot last year as school rep, but still, like, so many of our, like, modules just focus on, like, the works by white men, particularly when you actually get into stuff like governance, British politics, international relations. Like, you get no non-white perspectives, non-male perspectives on stuff like conflict. And I'm doing a, like, module on that focuses a lot on sexual violence and conflict, and almost all the writing is by, like, white men when we're talking about conflicts that are happening, like, all over the world.
I thought it was incredibly powerful. I think it was a shame that there weren't more members of staff there, as in the people who would actually be writing curricula. It's obviously something that impacts students a lot, that people feel strongly about. And that we've got a hell of a lot of work to do if we're going to, like, challenge these systems of oppression. I think that one of the points that was kind of implicitly made is that everyone is sort of born free. You can't be given freedom. You can merely ask institutions to stop oppressing. And so the institution has a duty, I think, to stop erasing the multitude of stories that exist, the multitude of work that exists across different disciplines by people of colour, and how that intersects with other issues as well.
So what were your general thoughts and feelings about the talk this evening?
I think it went really great. I think it's impressive that, you know, the number of people that actually turned up and showed up and showed interest in this. And I think it's really revolutionary for Leeds University to start having these discussions about curriculum. And also, I think that the most important thing now is to keep that momentum going, you know, start having conversations with the schools, with the staff, especially at the highest levels of the university, and making sure that we just keep that movement going and pushing it forward for future, you know, students at the university and across the nation as well.
So that was people's views, people who attended the event, on Why Is My Curriculum White? And Yasmin has the report back on the event itself.
Okay, what's up, guys? Sorry for my horrible voice during those interviews. Oh,
it's
terrible.
Lovely. Don't say that.
Oh my god, no way.
Music to my ears.
So yeah, this event, Why Is My Curriculum White? The most important thing to know about this, guys, is that this was not just a talk. It is a talk, but it was also the actual official launch of a campaign, a university-wide campaign, that will see Melissa as the head, but also pretty much anyone who wants to get involved, pushing the departments that that they are a part of to diversify the curriculum, the reading list, the whole course that they study, to make it less white, less Eurocentric, and more diverse and more reflective of the world around us. And so what's that going to involve is ordinary students obviously getting involved and talking to their course reps and telling them, you know, if you don't like a particular reading list and you think, well, everyone on here seems to come from one particular point of view or one particular country, one particular place, talking to your course reps about that, petitioning, getting involved in social media, all that sort of thing. And from what you heard there, it's also important to know that this isn't just about, you know, it was a part of Black History Month, but it's also about making it not just about colour, but also about gender, about, you know, sexual orientation. Currently, there are liberation coordinators who were present at the talk, and with the union, they will be producing and delivering campaigns that will advocate issues for various groups, so women, LGBT, ethnic minorities, that sort of thing. So this is really, you're going to see this around, not for the whole year. It's going to be ongoing and it's going to be big. So the main messages from the talk were, of course, that having the Eurocentric curriculum is of benefit to no one, because it just means the perspectives are narrowed, the perspectives that you get on are just not encompassing of the range of different views and feelings about your subject. There were a number of personal anecdotes that were given by the speakers, that some of them were quite frank, quite frankly, and really showed the scale of the problem. Melissa, for example, spoke about a module that she was on last year that was about freedom from oppression and the history of freedom from oppression. People fought about that. And she made the very, very relevant comments that obviously, you know, who's fought more against oppression than Black people. But in terms of the module on the reading list, it was about the French Revolution and very Eurocentric movements and suffragettes and things like that, and completely ignored any non-Eurocentric movements from freedom from oppression and gaining of rights and things like that. So yeah, those personal anecdotes really added something to the talk and really highlighted the relevance. This wasn't, you know, just academic or theoretical. This is really happening, guys. This is really real world stuff. Just to give you a statistic of the evening, there are 22,000 professors currently in the UK in universities. Of those, 75 are Black and only 17 are Black women. And 80% of Black PhD students do not complete their PhD for a number of reasons, funding, but also feeling quite isolated within their departments, that they don't get the support that they need. So really good talk, really hard hitting talk. Great range of speakers, from academics to students, and really passionate. And it was really good. So if you were there, great. And if you weren't there, oh, I feel bad for you, man.
I was there for part of it. I turned up sort of halfway through because I was busy. But I mean, I think it's a really, really, really interesting debate on whether curriculums in general, not just at university level but at all levels, whether that it is inclusive and whether it does tell stories of non-white people. I'm just wondering what people's views on that. I want to go to Jonathan, if that's okay, on this one.
That's perfectly fine. So I've just started first year studying English literature. And so literature is very much in my mind at the moment regarding this topic. And it brings me back to some of my experiences during A-level. And at A-level, I didn't study anyone who wasn't white. And I don't believe seeing the option of studying anyone who wasn't white in our specification, of course. I'm not sure about the others. Then going back to GCSE, I remember the odd poetry anthology, of course, had some. I think maybe Maya Angelou was a featured poet. But
really?
She... I believe so. And then
I'm even shocked by that. Yeah, that's quite
but she was, but she was so. But such things were rare. And so it's certain respect. And then heading off to the university now, one of the texts I'm studying is Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad, which is heavily involved in this subject in terms of race. So for me, race, colonial and post-colonial literary criticism is one of the most vibrant and interesting areas of criticism for me. And of course, one of the most striking essays on Heart of Darkness is by a man called, and forgive my pronunciation, Chinua Achebe.
Chinua Achebe, yeah.
That's right. There we go. Thank you very much. Who in 1974 gave his speech and has since developed that into an essay and so on. And it's one of the most interesting essays in the Northern Critical Edition. And he obviously wrote in 58, I believe, it was Things Fall Apart.
Yes.
Which is sometimes studied as a companion to Heart of Darkness. We don't do that, but it would be interesting to see that because it's the idea of almost both perspectives. And it obviously, neither perspectives are fully, and then obviously it's not exactly the same thing. But it is very incredibly interesting that on the one hand, you of course, you had the man from the Imperial Europe, whether he supported Imperial... Well, he didn't support Imperialism, but of course there are issues of whether he was racist or not, but that's literary criticism. I won't get into that. But then, of course, you have Achebe. See, I'm not sure... We're not sure whether it's Achebe or Achebe. I'm going to go with Achebe.
Chinua Achebe.
Achebe.
I pronounce it like that because I think... Chinua Achebe, I think he's Nigerian.
Yes, of descent, yes.
And I'm of Nigerian... Well, both Ghanaian and Nigerian descent, so it's sort of pronounced Achebe. So, for example, his name is Chinua Achebe. I don't know why I did the accent. I just But, no.
Well, I couldn't do the accent.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, this is... I think it was extremely interesting. Yasmin, do you have anything to add to that?
In terms of my course, for all courses this has ramifications, but for mine in particular it's quite uncomfortable because I do childhood studies. So that's for me, yeah, you know, I don't care, man. This is what I think. Childhood studies is like medicine. Childhood studies is like medicine. It's like law. It's like we're all doing this because we want to work with children and young people. It's basically a vocational course. That's why most people are on the course. So, you know, if we're going to be serving the general public, we need to understand the general public.
Indeed.
And we need to know their stories and know their histories. But so far, for the modules that I'm doing, that just hasn't occurred. It's all Western and it's mainly white men. So it's, I can't even call it Eurocentric because it's mainly been from British and American perspectives. I don't think I've even studied many papers from other European countries, so it's really limited. And in some areas where it would just be so simple, one of my modules, Social and Cultural Worlds, basically a lot of it is looking at pictures, films, you know, children's media, and obviously because it's media and it's images and it's sounds, you know, we don't need to understand the language to analyse picture books and films from other cultures. But all the ones we end up studying are Disney and English books, even though it'd be quite simple for us to just gain access to books and films from other countries because you don't need to understand language to be able to analyse it, but we don't even do that. So, yeah, I'm really worried about the implications of that because I need that diversity in order to understand the children and young people who I want to help.
Jasmine, do you want to add to any of this?
What was that you just called me, sorry?
Sorry.
It was Jasmine. Apologies.
I've been quite lucky with my course. I've had quite a lot of... Like, I studied... I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings in high school, and in college in English literature, we did Garden of Evening Mist by Tan Tuan Eng, which is a post-colonial text set in Malaysia. And now I'm doing cultural studies where for 2 weeks we've been studying the slave trade, we've been studying colonialism. So my has been quite varied. My curriculum has, although still predominantly white, it's been a lot better than I know it can be. But just because, like, one person in a room of four people has a good experience with or a more varied experience with curriculum, that's not enough. That's, you know, if you take a course that isn't cultural and media studies, where are you going to learn about the... I mean, obviously, that's not the only course that we'll talk about, colonialism, but if majority of other courses just show things from a white perspective, then you just can't expect people to become more tolerant in society. You can't expect... If you're not teaching the backgrounds of everyone, if you're not teaching... Because I think I heard the other day that up until 2006 or 2008 or something, there was a statue commemorating the horses that died in World War II, but there were no statues in the UK to do with slavery and the slave trade and colonialism.
Right.
And so we'll... I think there was a documentary about it, and you just can't expect people to look at history in a varied point of view, if you're not going to teach it from the very simple terms. Like, we learned about Florence Nightingale. Like, why? You know what I mean? She just, like, and that's something that you learn about when in primary school. Like, I still know the stories of Florence Nightingale now, but I didn't learn until about the other implications of, like, any other kind of work.
I mean, because Florence Nightingale versus sort of Mary Seacole, that, of course, there's sort of that debate there. I feel like I was sort of lucky in the sense that my school actually had a Black History Club at the, you know, sort of to teach the pupils about Black history and to teach sort of a sort of wide-ranging sort of viewpoints and so on and so forth. I was in primary school, like I said. I think that was very sort of interesting, and I was lucky. But we're going to play a song, and this is Temptations featuring Eric Hessel by Bondex, who are actually really, really cool.
Show me slowly, now that I'm focused, falling free. No, you see, feel the walls closing. Don't reach, no need. Keep this unspoken. Pardon me, heavenly. Keep this unspoken.
Featuring Eric Hessel by Bondex. Right, so I want to go into something that's very, very, very interesting. White privilege, the sociological theory of white privilege. It's something that in recent years I've sort of learned about. And it's come up so many times. I know so many people who talk about it all the time. And to be honest, I'm not entirely sure. I feel as if it's may well be a real thing due to how it's affected me as a Black person anyway. But I want to see what people's views are on white privilege. And I don't know, Tamsin, do you want to start us off? Oh my days, Yasmin. Apologies. Do you want to start us off and maybe?
We are quite similar. I do get how you could.
So
you know,
similar.
Mix us up.
Well, white privilege. So is that? I assume that's the idea that being white puts you in a privileged position in society.
Yes, the idea that being white, you don't have to deal with certain...
Oh, yeah, that exists, right? Know. Yeah.
Sorry. We're done with that. Moving on.
See, I was trying to be a bit unbiased, but, you know. I will have to try turn around and say, yes, it does exist. But I think there's also sort of a... Whenever it's sort of mentioned, there's sort of a class debate that comes into it as well, or a class debate that sort of a lot of white working class people feel is completely forgotten about. So I don't know. Do you want to maybe come on this?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Jack's talk will be linked to this with Liverpool.
Yeah, with Liverpool, definitely.
But I'm from Bradford. Just put that out there.
Which part of Bradford?
Well, I'm BD3, okay. Which is generally, it's both two things. One of the most impoverished parts of the UK, but also one of the most multicultural. And so there's a great mix of white persons and other ethnicities. But the point to remember is it's all heavily working class. And it seems to me, growing up, and so I went to a school where 95% of the students were Asian. And so I've always been immersed in that culture, or at least it's weird for me when I'm with majority of white people, other than my family. And what's happened, it seems that in that community, white privilege doesn't exist to the extent, because everyone is in the same boat in terms of social, economically. It's all working class, so you're in the same boat. But of course, if you go outside of that community, and I can't name certain ones, but as the country as a whole, and obviously some others, where it's possibly, they're often less ethnically mixed, white privilege is obviously an issue. And like I said, I haven't to an extent been conscious of too much of myself experience of white privilege, which I'm obviously happy about, because I've grown up in that school, in that environment. Ironically, in the area I've lived in, I've always been the ethnic minority, which has been fantastic for me. And so, like I said, in certain communities, especially working class communities, where it is as ethnically diverse as the one I've grown up in, white privilege isn't as apparent. But obviously it's still an issue for wider communities, and still is an issue in this country and outside of Europe.
That's interesting. Jasmine, do you want to come back to that? Or
Where I grew up, I didn't see white privilege in the traditional ways that you would think, because I also grew up in a working class but sort of not too bad area, basically, which is also very ethnically diverse. I saw white privilege in weird ways, or just differences in the way that white working class kids were treated to mainly kids from other backgrounds, but in very strange ways. Like, one of the ways in school was when kids weren't doing so well academically, and it just looked really stupid because there was probably a range of factors, but if you were white, then you'd get like a learning assistant and you'd get put in the unit and stuff like that. But if you were black, then they'd be like, okay, we're going to exclude you. And then they'd put you back into the exact same environment that got you into trouble in the first place. No learning assistant, no unit or whatever. And it was kind of sad because these black kids were just like, yeah, I'm big man in it. Like, they don't, you know, they're not going to mess with me. But it's just like, no, they're kind of saying that they don't really care because they haven't put any interventions in place to turn you around. And then it was just like silly things. Like, I remember walking down the hallway one time and it just showed like differences in how we view race, because there was this black boy and he was going to this white girl, your artwork's so great and oh my god, it looks so amazing. And I was like, I know you've got so many black girls who are your friends who do textiles and drama and art and things like that, and I have never heard you say their work is good or even commented on it and stuff like that. And it was just like, it was those sorts of things. But so, not white privilege, but there were definitely differences in how we treated one another based on race. But that was just at my particular school. My school was weird.
No, I think there were examples of that in my primary school, and I could probably even say personally that there were examples of that, especially sort of because I'm both dyslexic and ADHD, and obviously I was diagnosed with ADHD last year. I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was 8. There was also another person in my class, another two people in my class who had dyslexia, but they were both white. They both had learning support people with them to help them out a lot more so than I did, which I always thought was an interesting situation. I think maybe there were a load of different sort of things that would sort of you know, worked into that. But I always thought it was an interesting situation. It was quite sort of, I think back to it and think, was it down to race, or was it down to just, am I being a bit paranoid? But I think that in itself, being a black person and having to think that, oh, am I paranoid, or was it real racism? That in itself is something that I think a lot of people, white people, don't have to deal with anyway. So that in itself can even be called maybe white privilege.
The confidence that that you don't get such treatment.
Sorry, go ahead.
I saw a thing the other day, and it was about there was a man who went to a conference, and it was about, and they were talking about gender and they were talking about race, and the speaker was like, right, all the women in the room, what do you see when you look in the mirror? And the women just all like, we see a very, like, we are female, you're very aware of the fact that you're female. And the man was saying that he just thought of himself as a person, like, he just thought of himself as a person. And then she asked all the black women what they saw themselves as, and they said that it went even further. It went into, like, having all these different aspects going into it just so they can fit in and not, like, have racism on an everyday basis. Like, they had to take that into account with the way that they were dressed and the way... Whereas, like, for white women and for white men, you don't have to... And I'm sure it's the same for black men to an extent. And just the fact that these black women were going very far into how they looked into the mirror, whereas a white male could just walk out of the house.
Yeah. On that, actually, it's funny because I deliberately sort of sometimes speak with a much higher pitch voice just to sort of make sure that I'm not as threatening. I sort of I try to be sort of self-aware of myself, just to make sure, especially when it's sort of dark outside, it's sort of things like, oh, will I scare the person that's next to me, or will I scare the woman who I'm going to walk past? There's so much sort of psychological space that being black or an ethnic minority sort of takes up that I think a lot of white people don't sort of have to deal with. But I mean, does anyone else want to sort of throw any more sort of bits and pieces into that?
Yeah, education, as we were talking about earlier, it's incredibly important area of this topic, in the sense that we obviously always have certain... So obviously there are always surveys, and they always have tottings up of the numbers of different ethnicities and sexes in higher education institutions. And obviously it's a lot of them, and it can vary obviously from institution and can vary from subject, but often it's seen as, or is, a white dominated area, higher education institutions. And it seems that often, and it goes back to the working class thing, it often seems that education can be the key. Of course it won't be the solve all thing, because obviously there can be deeper issues with certain people. But greater education, equal education, especially with sometimes treating issues that children have, treating them equally and the same, would go a long way to, on the road, to improving these areas.
Brilliant. All right, well, I'm going to quickly play us a song, because I like the song. Ha ha ha, ha ha ha. It is A Tiring Game by John Newman featuring Charlie Wilson.
Love is just a tiring game. Want a thing to change. Our love is just a tiring game. I'll never give it up. I'll never give it up. Our love is just a tiring game. I never want a thing to change. Our love is just a tiring game. I'll never give it up. I'll never give it up.
That was Tiring Game by John Newman featuring Charlie Wilson. Right, so we are at the section of the show where we tell you what is coming up next. Yes. So we have Luke here who is going to be doing the beat next. So what have you got coming up?
This week we're going to be focusing, because it's Black History Month, we're going to be focusing on black people in music, so talking a bit about MOBO Awards, talking a bit about black people.
Which is going to be in Leeds, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it is, yeah. So we're going to be playing a few of the nominees as well, and talking about black people and other aspects of music, so a bit about Indian alternative music at festivals and things like that.
Yes, that's me, that's me. Brilliant. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to ask you like a quick question.
Go for it.
Like, this is going to be a funny question. Actually, it's not going to be a funny question, I have no idea. What do you think about all the cancer stuff and the bacon stuff?
Oh, what, the... new research.
Yeah, the new research, yeah.
It's
not really a funny question, is it? It's so hilarious.
It's so funny.
It's quite silly.
Do you eat bacon?
Yeah, I ate bacon, yes.
Do you like bacon?
Yeah, I like bacon.
Will you stop eating bacon?
Probably not.
Okay.
I mean,
that's your question.
There are worse things I could do to which could cause cancer, so I feel like bacon's not the very worst thing, so.
True, I guess. Right, we're going to move on. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
We have Jack with us,
yep.
Who is from, guess, with his accent, keep speaking, speak.
Hello, I'm Jack, and I'm from Liverpool.
Yeah! My own half is from Liverpool, so you know.
Oh, good.
He's from Halewood. So,
oh, Halewood, yeah.
But
I live close.
In particular, I think Liverpool is actually quite a special place in terms of when it comes to racism and multiculturalism. So what can you tell us?
So Liverpool has quite a dark and sort of good history in the sense of the dark times when Liverpool was a major port and probably one of the one of the lead players when it comes to the slave trade. That's how the city got rich. A lot of the merchants were there. They built a lot of the inner city with the money that they made from the slave trade. Liverpool officially apologised in 2007, which was a long time coming, but it happened. And also Liverpool played a major part in what is now looked back on quite fondly. And there was a 1981 race riot in Toxteth. And the reason it's looked back on fondly now is because it was sort of the breaking point in which people started to talk about race issues in Liverpool. It was an area where there was a lot of unemployment. There was a lot of tensions with the police and there was a lot large Afro-Caribbean community, and the riots got people talking, and since then education within Liverpool has been to the point where we do learn about these issues, and we do specifically learn about the issues within Liverpool. In my history classes, a lot of them were about the slave trade, about the race riots. In literature, we looked a lot at Jimmy McGovern, who is a Liverpool writer, and he wrote a lot about class and inequality within in terms of racism. And yeah, it's quite interesting because now we have like a lot of festivals that celebrate our diversity in Liverpool. We've got quite a diverse city.
It's capital of culture at one point.
Yeah, in 2008.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have like every year there's lots of festivals. We have a Brazilian festival. We have a festival celebrating ethnic minorities. And it's one of those things where you see everyone there. Everyone has a good time. Everyone knows each other. It is quite community based, and it is quite nice to see that the city, which was once like part of such a horrible thing, is now quite a community in terms of ethnicity.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. Tamsin is going to take us to, or tell us about the events that are coming up quickly.
Okay, so basically, for this clan, we've got quite a good one coming up tomorrow. Jeremy Corbyn is going to be here, my boy. My one true love is going to be in Leeds Uni. I think he's coming to see me, even though quite a few people told me that that's not the case, and that he's actually coming for his Q&A on Missing Million. I mean, tickets have sold out, but if you plan on waiting outside like I do to get a selfie with him or propose or something, then I'm sure you can make it along. Then you've got the juniors, junior doctor's contract protest, which is tonight in Leeds at 7 o'clock. So you've got an hour to get yourself to Victoria Square. There is also a film screening hosted by the Feminist Society on tomorrow, which gives you free popcorn, and you can have a fun feminist chat afterwards, which is also free. On Friday, 30th of October, from 7 till 10, in Leeds University Union at Room 5, you can join the Quidditch and Harry Potter Society for a night of arts and crafts. You can meet some awesome people, get involved with a great society, and create a cute necklace, apparently, or your own Harry Potter wand. Might be along there. Make one for Jeremy Corbyn. Then on Thursday, 29th of October, tomorrow, from 6 till 9 in the LUU Common Room, there's a Palestinian Society, and it will give you an opportunity to have all your questions about Palestine answered, and it'll be an informal event with food and drink for free. And then finally, there's a rifle give it a go session. Tickets are £12, and that's from 5 till 9:30 on Thursday in LUU Room 4. At the Give It A Go session, you'll get to shoot 40.22 rounds on live firing rifles, and we'll have unlimited ammunition for air rifles and pistols. And you can tell that I don't know how to use a rifle.
That's
so
fair enough.
With the pronunciation of that, so yeah, I've got quite a few good little things going on.
Right, so this has been Political Animal with Yasmin DaCosta, Jonathan Green, Tamsin Scott, Jack Patrick, and Lance Casely Hayford. Thank you for listening, and we are out.